Welcome to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Cherry.
Yes.
The circus has left town.
They have.
Something happened last night.
Mm-hmm.
It was a debate. Maybe a concept of a debate. I'm not exactly sure, but people talked. We listened.
Yes.
And now we have a chance to hear from all of you.
Yes. I watched the debate. Yeah. I know you stayed up late. I was on X and Facebook and Instagram looking at the memes in real time.
So interesting
many memes. Reaction.
So yeah. Many memes. And we want your reaction this hour because mm-hmm. we're going to be talking about the debate in our main segment. Two big questions for you this hour. What was the biggest moment of the debate in your eyes? And what stuck out to you? What do you think will stick with us moving forward? Give us a call. 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
And thank you for everybody who checked out our video on Instagram. Mm,
that's true.
Yes, we did a little funny. You might want to go check it out. It was cute. Avi, you're like a comedy star.
Wow. High praise. Thank you.
Yes. You're very funny.
Thank you so much. And I appreciated doing that with you and getting a chance to connect with some folks online. And like we said, we want to keep the connection coming this hour. Studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah,
but before we get into all of that, a trio of local news stories, and we wanted to draw your attention to something you may have missed because this news broke during the debate last night, and it is tragic news. We learned last night that 31-year-old Philadelphia police officer Jamie Roman has passed away. Officer Roman was shot in the neck on June 22nd in the Kensington neighborhood, and he has now died from his injuries. City officials held a press conference this morning. I'd like to play a clip here from Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel.
It's probably one of the most difficult times I've ever had in my career in 38 years in policing. As the mayor indicated, I've been here far too many times. But to sit and with the family, to see the strength of this family, to see the strength of his wife and his two children, 7-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son, to see the strength of his father and everyone that was involved, how much work did they sit there, sitting visibly next to him, having hope that he may survive, having that hope, and only to be called yesterday to let us know that he was not going to make it.
And my deepest sympathy to the entire PPD and to the family of Officer Jamie Roman. Now, let me tell you, the man accused of killing Roman is 36-year-old Ramon Rodriguez Vasquez. And according to police, Officer Roman and his partner pulled over Vasquez because his vehicle was not registered. They then searched the car and found a gun holster. As that happened, Vasquez began to flee and fired at the officers. And you know, it brought up to me how dangerous these car stops can be for police officers. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what is in a car. And this is one of those instances where it turned fatal. And this, of course, Roman's death comes about 18 months after Temple police officer Christopher Fitzgerald was shot and killed by a carjacking suspect. He was shot and killed in February of 2023.
Yeah, and not too much, unfortunately, to add to this story, but we wanted to make sure you were at least aware of it because it happened during the debate. A lot of people were distracted. Mm-hmm. And I do think, unfortunately, a lot of people had even forgotten the fact that this officer was fighting for his life in the hospital for several months. And unfortunately, the ending came and it was not the ending we were hoping for.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to move down to Delaware.
Yes. Let's go to Delaware.
Delaware held its primary election last night and made some headlines, some expected, some not so much. The big ones, Democrat Sarah McBride won the race for Delaware's lone congressional seat. That makes her the favorite in November to become the first transgender person elected to the U.S. Congress.
So that was an expected result.
Yeah, it was.
But looks like history is going to be made there.
Yeah. And despite lacking support in another race, Newcastle County Executive Matt Meyer won the Democratic race for governor. He beat out current Lieutenant Governor Bethany Hall Long, who had been the party favorite.
Yep.
She had been embattled dealing with questions around some campaign financing. So that probably hindered her. Another race that caught my eye, current Governor John Carney won the Democratic primary for mayor of Wilmington, and he'll now be running without a GOP opponent in November.
So very likely the next mayor.
Basically going to be the mayor of Wilmington. And maybe the upset of the entire evening, Delaware House Speaker Valerie Longhurst lost her primary to Camila Smith, a challenger from the left endorsed by the Working Families Party. And, you know, the Working Families Party has been upsetting Democratic races left and right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this was not something I had my eye on. So I almost had to sort of catch up this morning. But it was like shades of Eric Cantor almost. You don't hear a lot of examples of a legit party leader being primaried like this successfully from someone who not a lot of folks had heard of. So that was certainly a surprising result out of Delaware. The rest, I think, about what we expected. Matt Meyer, I think he had raised more money than Bethany Hall Long in that governor's race. Like you said, Bethany Hall Long was the party favorite, but you know, how far does that go these days? So sort of an interesting test of money raised versus machine power. But I think the rest of the results are about what folks expected in Delaware. And now we're turning over the page to November.
Yeah, but that Wilmington mayor thing, I'm just like,
you're still not over that.
I'm not over that because I feel
going
like
from
going from
to
governor to mayor.
Yeah. Carving his own path. John Carney.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely his own path. So all right. Talking about, you know,
carving your own path. Yeah. Unprecedented. Well, this is not unprecedented, but it's nearly unprecedented. So, when someone wins an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony, they call it an EGOT, Jerry. Did you know that?
I've heard of that.
They call it an EGOT. It's very rare. Before this week, only 19 people had ever EGOTed.
Ooh, I like that verb.
That's a verb.
EGOTed.
But we can add two more to the list. They are the songwriting team of Justin Paul and Benj Pasek, and they became EGOTers this week when they won an Emmy.
Congratulations.
Congratulations to the both of them. Here's the local connection, Cherry.
Okay.
Benj Pasek is from Philly, went to Friends Central.
Oh.
And, you know, yesterday you said we're adjacent to history because the debate was across the street. Well, we are adjacent to history again today because Benj Pasek's mom has been on our show as a guest. Yes. Temple professor Kathy Hirsch Pasek. She's an expert on child psychology, renowned in her field. And she was a guest of ours. So maybe when she's a guest again, we'll have to ask her about her son, who is now an EGOTer.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. So by the way, they're a songwriting team, Benj and Justin. They met in college. They won an Oscar for their work on La La Land. Remember that movie? That was a great movie.
That was.
And then they won a Grammy and a Tony for their work on Evan Hansen. And then finally they got their Emmy this week for a song that they co-wrote for the Hulu comedy smash hit Only Murders in the Building.
I like that show, by
the way. It's a great, and if you saw the last season, you remember that one of the plots revolved around whether Steve Martin's character could successfully complete this very complicated song called Which of the Pickwick Triplets Did It? And this songwriting team, they co-wrote that song, and that's how they got their Emmy. So let's hear a little bit of Which of the Pickwick Triplets Did It.
Which of the Pickwick Triplets did it? Which of the Spawn had the brawn to kill? Will a baby get tried for that trust side? Coo-choo-coo-choo-coo. Time for you to admit it. So quick as a whip, got a Pickwick Triplet did it.
Bum, bum.
Only Steve Martin could say that. It was a difficult song to say.
Part of the gag is that this song is like the most difficult song to do because it's so packed with rhymes and multisyllabic words. I can't even say multisyllabic words. And so they do, there's a whole gag around that revolves through the season. But, you know, this songwriting team, Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, they had to write an impossible song. And that's what they did. And they got an Emmy for it.
Well, congratulations to them. I love the Philly connection. And they're on the list now with people like John Legend, also connected to Philly, Viola Davis, Jennifer Hudson, Tim Rice, Whoopi Goldberg, Audrey Hepburn. That's a pretty exclusive list.
It's a great list to be on.
Yeah.
We're not on it yet. You know, you never know. Give us time.
Keep working.
Head down. Keep working. I believe Benj Pasek is the first Philadelphian to EGOT from my quick research. But as you noted, John Legend, who is UPenn grad, also EGOTed. And John Legend, and I'm not making this up, is before he went to Penn, he grew up in a town in Ohio called Springfield.
Yeah.
which, by the way, came up last night at the presidential debate. So let's transition now.
Yes, and we want to hear your thoughts. What moments stood out to you? Share them with us, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And as we close today, we are listening to the 1981 hit Before I Let Go by Frankie Beverly and Maze. R&B singer Frankie Beverly is from Philly, went to Germantown High. We learned this morning that he passed away at age 77. Rest in peace, Frankie Beverly.
This you can bear. You stood right beside me. Yeah. And I'm on.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Elizabeth, and I'm from Holland, PA. She actually talked about some policy issues, and Donald Trump talked about nothing but himself.
Justin, Philadelphia. She was able to articulate her point of view a little well and made Donald Trump lose his mind.
My first name is Nini, and I am from Maryland. Oh my gosh, I was stressed the whole time. I felt like I was watching bad theater. A lot of her opinions on the whole Israel-Palestine thing, some of the things she said on that kind of stressed me out. But that was the biggest thing, I think, for me. Overall, she did a good job compared to Trump, in my opinion.
All right, there you have it. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aarons.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. There you heard a montage of voices from this morning at the Temple University Regional Rail Station. They were some of the millions of Americans who tuned in to see Donald Trump and Kamala Harris debate at the National Constitution Center last night. And despite the spin that each side gave at the convention center after the main event, what really matters is what viewers took away and if either candidate made headway with the handful of folks who are still on the fence.
We might not know the answer to that for a bit, Cherry, but we do luckily have three very smart guests to try to make sense of what happened last night. With us are Ben Berger, Associate Professor of Political Science at Swarthmore College and Executive Director of the college's Lang Center for Civic and Social Responsibility. Ben Berger, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
We also have Jasmine Sessoms, Executive Director of Center 1968. Jasmine, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
And we also have Charlie Dent, former Pennsylvania Republican Congressman from the Lehigh Valley. Charlie Dent, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you.
And of course, we want to get your big takeaways from this debate. What was the biggest moment of the debate? What stuck out to you? Call us 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org.
All right. So we've got a lot of comments. We got a lot of callers lined up. But before we get to all of that, I just want to go around the table here and imagine that we're a month from now and we're thinking back to this debate. What do you think people will remember from last night after a whole nother month of news cycle and news stories? And Charlie Dent, I'll start with you.
Probably the, people eating their pets out in Springfield, Ohio.
Yeah.
That'll probably be the viral. That will probably be the viral moment of the debate that people are going to have a hard time erasing from their memories. There are plenty of moments, but I'd have to say that was the big one. And that's not good for Trump, obviously, but that was pretty clear to me that was a big faux pas.
Yeah. And if you missed it, actually, let's hear that clip. This is former President Trump repeating claims that Haitian migrants in Ohio are eating their pets. Let's roll that tape.
They're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
I just want to clarify here. You bring up Springfield, Ohio, and ABC News did reach out to the city manager there. He told us there have been no credible reports of specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community.
Well, I've seen people on television.
Let me just say here, this is the
people on television say my dog was taken and used for food.
All right, so that certainly was a standout moment from last night. Jasmine Sessoms, do you agree? Is that the thing that will stick? Will it be maybe something a little less definitional than that, like a feeling? I mean, what do you think we'll remember?
So people are definitely going to remember that. Yeah, I was at my debate party, and it was a hot topic. Another one is pretty much going to be that Kamala Harris is qualified to do this job and Donald Trump was spiraling out of control. I mean, it was...
So the sort of the tonal difference between
the
two.
Absolutely. It was the greatest hits of lies and the fact-checking. A lot of people at the debate party were very surprised that she owns guns.
I was surprised by that as well. Yeah.
I mean, people could not believe that this woman owns a gun in America. And I thought, well, of course she would own a gun, right? Mm-hmm. But that was a huge point of discussion last night, too. So I think people will remember that.
Yeah. And Ben Berger, love to get your thoughts.
Yeah. You know, the answer to me a month from now is really that it depends on how well the different teams do their jobs. In this particular media environment, it's not going to be about, I think, who watched it tonight, because, Chair, you mentioned the undecided voters. Well, they might well not have been watching. So I think it's going to be decided. What we remember is going to be decided by how well memes and short videos are used and utilized and deployed to shape people's perceptions and memory of this whole thing. You know, Avi, you're a basketball guy, right? Mm-hmm. And so we talk in basketball about how people look for poster moments, a moment when one player just dominates another one. And it's so great, the domination, it's got to be enshrined on a poster or a T-shirt. Well, the question is, what will the poster moments be? And I absolutely could see the dogs and cats one being one of them. In fact, I'd offer up a T-shirt right now. It'd be something like, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, Trump 2024.
Right. Yeah. Right. You could put it out there.
Yep. Make sure people remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to bring in a caller. We have Rich from Harleysville who has a comment. Rich, you're on Studio 2. What's your comment?
Hi. I just wanted to point out that I'm kind of young. I'm 26 years old, so I've been around too long. But I've noticed that a lot of times it seems like a Democrat will come in and basically try and act like they're just going to fix the problems that the Republicans always make. And then they get elected on that, and then they carry on, you know, basically the status quo. And I was really encouraged last night that it seems like she's got a bit more in store than that. Mm. You know, I think that, like, her ability to offer peaceful solutions to currently violent situations is really going to be the make or break for me personally. But other than that, I was surprised at how not status quo she seemed to remain throughout.
Yeah. And Rich is talking about VP Harris's performance. And that brings me to my next question to our panel. Each side, each candidate had a certain thing that they needed to execute during that debate. We did a show on this topic yesterday. For Trump, Tuesday night was about his disciplined temperament. For Harris, it was about showing she could take on Trump and stand toe-to-toe with foreign leaders, and as well for people to learn more about her. And so, Jasmine, I want to start with you for this round. Do you think each side accomplished whatever goal was set out for them?
No. I do not. I think Kamala Harris was extremely calm, and arguably she did the best out of any presidential candidate, including Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, against Donald Trump. She did not feed into the name calling, the attacks, the lies. She didn't feed into it. She stayed steady on message. She was clear. And to the caller's point, she didn't try to solve all with her magic wand stick that most Democrats do. She gave tangible solutions, even when fracking came up. We all know that has been a sticking point. Hey, you shifted. She said, you know what? I have shifted and evolved. And we as people can relate to that. No, Donald Trump, he melted down within like 15 minutes. You know, we're talking about dogs and cats being eaten, immigrants. You had nothing to do with Project 2025. I mean, he literally melted down and resulted back to name-calling once again and trying to, even when his mic was muted, was still trying to overtalk someone and then had the nerve to say, I am talking. Does that sound familiar? You know, it was childish, and he did not seem steady. He did not seem with it. He did not seem like he even admitted he didn't even have a plan.
Yeah.
Because I'm not president.
Yeah. And I want to play this comment because she did talk about fracking, and I want to play that comment if you can. Let me see where it's.
I know you say that your values have not changed. So then why have so many of your policy positions changed?
So my values have not changed, and I'm going to discuss every one of the, at least every point that you've made. But in particular, let's talk about fracking because we're here in Pennsylvania. I made that very clear in 2020. I will not ban fracking. I have not banned fracking as Vice President of the United States. And in fact, I was the tie-breaking vote on the Inflation Reduction Act, which opened new leases for fracking.
Yeah.
Charlie Dent, you've been a politician in Pennsylvania for a long time. Do you think that was a satisfactory answer? And let me ask you, in addition to that, do you think Harris had the room in this debate to define herself for the public, given how outsized Trump's comments and his presence was last night?
Well, first to the question of fracking, it seemed to me that, you know, she answered it. The problem is, do people believe her on that one? Mm-hmm. She made the comment on that you know, back in 2019 that she was going to ban fracking. She was for the Green New Deal. She was for Medicare for all. And so she has changed her position, which she obviously has the right to do. The problem there is, do people believe it? And I'm not sure if she did. Frankly, if I were her, I would have taken it a step further and said, the other reason I changed my position is because of one Vladimir Putin, who's used natural gas as a weapon against our friends and allies throughout Europe and the rest of the world. And so America needs not only American gas, but Pennsylvania gas in particular, to help meet this threat. But she didn't go there. So, but I think that's her challenge, though. The people say things during campaigns, but do they really mean them? Will she be hostile to the industry once she gets into the White House? I mean, that's really, and if Trump were a better candidate, he would have pressed her more, but he's not a particularly good candidate. And I'm sorry, your second question was? Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask whether she sort of had the opportunity, as we talk about, you know, trying to get people to trust her on some of these changes in policy. Did she have the space to define herself for the audience last night? Because she was at least the bigger unknown between the two of them, I think, to the average voter and viewer. Yeah.
You know, one thing I would have said if I were her is that, yes, of course, she has the right to evolve on issues. All candidates do. And that's actually a sign that, you know, people are maturing, or they're growing up, or they're just looking at the world a little differently than they once did. That's OK. But she would have been smart then to pivot back and say, and look at my opponent here, Donald Trump, you know, who has unfixed policy positions. And they shift constantly. Look at abortion. We're all struggling with his positions on abortion. We've got whiplash from all the positions he's taken, and kind of put it back on him as a flip-flopper himself. So I just would have, you know, just kind of just deflected a little bit more than maybe she did.
Yeah, and if you are just tuning in, we're getting reaction from last night's debate. We want to hear your big takeaways. What was the biggest moment of the debate? What stuck out to you? The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. I want to bring in another caller. We have Susan from Philadelphia who watched the debate. Susan, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My comment is, I wasn't really surprised, having followed, you know, everything that's been said before the debate. I was highly, my whole little watching group, the moderators didn't do their job. The earlier someone said that they did mute a mic, but I never saw mics being muted. And also, they didn't follow up when the person didn't answer the question. Mm. For example, did Trump answer any of the questions? So yeah. The moderators, I get it. You know, not a good grade for me. D minus at the best.
Yeah, thank you so much, Susan
from Philadelphia. Yeah. So let me flip that to you, Ben Berger from Swarthmore College, because when you compare it to the first debate of this cycle, I do think the moderators were a bit more active. For instance, they fact-checked some really outlandish claims that Trump made, and we heard one of those clips. But I will agree with Susan that there were several times when candidates basically failed to address the question, went on their own tangents, and sometimes we're allowed to do that. Is that pretty standard? Have we lowered our expectations too much for these moderators? What did you think about the moderation?
So the caller makes a really interesting point. You know, in negotiations, they often say that if both sides feel like it was unfair, they lost, you've done something right. So Fox News and conservative commentators were all over the moderators last night, saying they were unfair against Trump. So if the caller is saying that they're kind of unfair against Harris and not sort of pushing Trump hard enough, that actually could be showing us that they did something right there. It's a really difficult job. And the difficulty is, in the first debate, when the CNN moderators did not go and do any fact-checking, what it makes is the person who's being attacked a lot, they've got to be on the defense all the time. They've got to spend their time talking about why that's not true.
Right.
Instead of making policy arguments. Now, Trump had to do some of that yesterday. I think the reason why they did what they did was because he's made so many more false statements. If you look at the tally, the scorecards that some of the newspapers put out, in fact-checking it, there were many, many, many more false, demonstrably false statements that Trump made. So I thought they did a pretty darn good job overall, but I'm not unhappy to hear people on both sides complaining about it.
Yeah, and I want to play two clips back to back, and I want to start with this clip we have where, you know, Harris dodges a question about late-term abortions. Take a listen.
Will she allow abortion in the 8th month, 9th month, 7th month?
Come on.
Okay, would you do that? Why don't you ask her that question?
Why don't you answer the
problem.
Question? Would you
because
veto?
Under Roe v. Wade,
answer the question,
you,
would
could,
you, veto?
You could do abortions in the 7th month, the 8th month, the 9th
that's
month, and probably after birth.
And that's her dodging a question. And then the second clip is VP Kamala Harris talking more effectively on the issue of abortion. Take a listen.
And now in over 20 states, there are Trump abortion bans, which make it criminal for a doctor or nurse to provide health care. In one state, it provides prison for life. Trump abortion bans that make no exception even for rape and incest, which understand what that means. A survivor of a crime, a violation to their body, does not have the right to make a decision about what happens to their body next. That is immoral. And one does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree. The government, and Donald Trump certainly, should not be telling a woman what to do with her body.
And so Jasmine, Charlie, I want to bring you both back into the conversation. Jasmine, starting with you, I mean, she dodged this. This is a tough late-term abortion, tough thing Democrats have to deal with. At the same time, she articulated something in a very, like, very good way when she's talking about abortion. Your reaction to that? How did she handle this issue if you look at it from a 360 view?
So I'll be honest. I didn't think that she dodged the question. I think that she, one, Trump is, again, over-talking her and saying that she is going to do 7, 8, et cetera, term abortions. She's never actually said that. And so I think she's reacting to that, which I wouldn't have taken the bait. I think that was a misstep on her part. I wouldn't even have taken the bait. I think she should have went right into what she did later to really clarify the stance. Because at this point, where we also Joe Biden go wrong was trying to refute what Trump was saying. Mm-hmm. And so she started doing it, and then somebody and something in her head was like, nope, I'll clean it up later. And that happens to all of us.
And you think that's the smart way to go.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think she should have took the bait, but she started to because it's hard, right? She's still a human.
Right.
She's still human and it's hard. And she took it and then she said, mm-mm, you know what?
And then the second clip was more effective.
And she's clear and it's factual. And we know what she's going to do because she has not changed her stance in that way. So I didn't look at it as she dodged the question. I look at it as she took the bait, which sometimes we do. And then she clarified and factually said, this is my stance.
And Charlie Dent, how do you think Donald Trump did on the issue of abortion last night?
Oh, I thought he did terribly on abortion last night. And I thought this was probably Kamala Harris's strongest moment of the night, talking on women's health, women's reproductive health, where she clearly is quite comfortable. And Trump is not, because Trump has shifted so many times. She was smart to call these Trump abortion bans. He was saying things like, oh, boy, you know, everybody wanted Roe v. Wade overturned and wanted this returned to the states. Well, that's not true. A lot of people didn't want Roe v. Wade overturned. And he kept saying, you know, all the legal experts wanted overturned. Well, some did, but a lot didn't either. So, but he kept making these, he always talks in superlatives, and that hurts him. I thought Kamala, you know, should have answered the question on the late-term abortion. And there's a pretty straightforward answer there. And this is where I think Democrats could do themselves some they could do themselves a good service if they simply said, you know, we oppose third trimester abortions. The only time they should be permitted is if there is some type of a medical emergency, health, life of the mother, fetus. And nobody wants to have an abortion in the 8th or 9th month. They just don't. But if there is one, it's because there is a very major problem. to the either to the fetus or to the mother. And it's a gut-wrenching thing. And go in and play some offense on this. And say Roe v. Wade says, you know, it's, you know, it's, you know, abortion's legal up to 24 weeks. But after that, there's an emergency. And I don't know why she just didn't say that. And that would, I think, put, you know, put the rest of those concerns. But overall, she did very well on that point. Trump did not. He's been shifting all over the place on this issue. And by turning it to the states, now she was able to say, yeah, okay. And now all the states, so many of these states have banned it with no exceptions. And Trump kept talking about exceptions, but that's not what's happened in several states.
You just heard there from Charlie Dent, former Republican congressman from the Lehigh Valley, also talking with Jasmine Sessoms and Ben Berger this hour. And I want to read in some comments from our listeners. Here's Kate from New Jersey, who said Trump was totally demoralized because he did not have his MAGA fans at the scene. Of course, no audience last night. Mm-hmm. That's Kate's perspective. Here's Royce from Reading, Pennsylvania. And maybe later we'll get to something else that someone else from Reading, Pennsylvania said last night. But Royce said they gave Trump too much time and let him talk whenever he interrupted, even though that was against the rules. And Royce notes that they're an independent voter. Let me ask you about that, Ben Berger, because it did seem like Trump had the latitude to speak more. I'm not sure if that actually helped him, but what did you make of that dynamic as the debate played out?
So as a person watching it, as a citizen, I was annoyed, just like our,
the commenter. Yes. Yeah.
However, you know, as somebody who's trying to observe debates and stand back and see what's happening, I'm going to go back to that negotiation point. People on both sides were dissatisfied. Yeah. Again, it was the Trump supporters were saying, look, it's so terrible. The moderators are not fact-checking Kamala Harris, but they are fact-checking Donald Trump. On the other hand, Kamala Harris, people could say, well, look, Donald Trump got to violate the rules so often. He was talking over the dead mic. They put him back on and let him make additional
points.
They
reactivated the mic, it seemed.
Exactly. Yeah. So he was going against the rules. He doesn't like to have that pointed out. He doesn't have regard for the rules and all. But the very fact that both sides had something to complain about made me feel a little bit better about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring in another caller. We have Gary from Reading.
Shout out Reading.
Who has a comment on the debate. Gary, you are on Studio 2. What's your comment?
Thank you. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I was disappointed in Kamala's presentation last night. I thought she missed a golden opportunity to present herself as a change candidate, and I was disappointed for two reasons. One, she didn't always take the question. I'm tired. You gave the moderators a hard time about not holding the line. We have to hold our candidates to a higher standard. She should take the question that was given to her because there was plenty of meat from the past economic cycle that the Dems had ushered in here that she could have used just on the first softball question she was given. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I don't need any candidate to tell me what the other candidate wants to do. I want them to tell me what they're going to do. And all too often last night, she was trying to tell us what the Trump team wants to do. We know what the Trump team wants to do is anathema to a good democracy. But she had a golden platform here to tell us what she was going to do. And I didn't think she gave us enough meat.
Wow, yeah. That was a forceful comment from
Thank you, Gary.
And brought up a lot of good points. Mm-hmm. And we're about to go to the break, so I'm going to let us sort of marinate in that comment. And maybe when we get back, we can talk as a panel about Harris, because even right off the bat, she did not really answer the first question. But it does seem like when you're debating Donald Trump, he has a habit of doing that. Mm-hmm. So it's almost lets everyone get away from it. And you do sometimes feel like the spirit of the debate gets sucked out of it, and sometimes the substance as well. So, and Gary was feeling that, Gary from Reading. So we're about to go to a break. Let me reintroduce our guests. We have Ben Berger, Associate Professor of Political Science at Swarthmore College, Jasmine Sessoms, Executive Director of Center 1968, and Charlie Dent, former Republican congressman from the Lehigh Valley.
Yes, and we want to hear from you. What was the biggest moment for you from last night? You can email us studio2@whyy.org or get on the phone and call us 888-477-9499, and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Antoine, you know, bringing up race as a black man, I'm tired of it. So I like the way Trump handled that. You know, he didn't placate to, you know, the story on race. I feel like Trump is a great candidate.
Matt Lamerges, I think it's going well. I think Donald Trump is presenting his case to the country. I think he's highlighting the issues that are facing Americans, the issues that are on every American's mind, rather than using baseless attacks.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Those were the voices of Republican voters who attended a GOP watch party last night at the Kempton Hotel Monaco on Independence Mall. And this hour, we've been breaking down the debate between former President Trump and Vice President Harris that happened last night right across the street from us at the National Constitution Center. So let me reintroduce our guests. We have Ben Berger, Associate Professor of Political Science at Swarthmore College and Executive Director of the college's Lang Center for Civic and Social Responsibility. We have Jasmine Sessoms, Executive Director of Center 1968. And we have Charlie Dent, former Pennsylvania Republican Congressman from Lehigh Valley.
And we have you. We have a question for you as well. What was the biggest moment of the debate? What stuck out to you? Email us studio2@whyy.org or call 888-477-9499. And just before the break, Jasmine, we heard from a listener in Reading, Pennsylvania, who was, you know, a little annoyed with Harris, felt that she was not directly answering some of the questions that were posed last night by the moderators, and feels like we should hold her more accountable than the moderators. What did you think about that comment?
You know, Gary, my friend out there in Reading, stop. Because, I mean, I have to tell you, we are holding her to the highest of high standards. Did she answer every question? No. But to say that we didn't get a good sense of who she was last night, that's just not factual. She had policy updates. Trump had none. And what I think what gets under my skin is that we are holding Kamala Harris to the highest of high standards because she is running for the highest office. But to say that you don't get a sense of who she is from a 90-minute debate, I'm sorry, my friend, you're not paying attention. You are just not paying attention.
Because we got to get you and Gary in a room and work this out. I think what Gary is saying is, if I had to imagine, I think Gary's saying, yeah, I know Trump doesn't do that, but I still want someone on the stage to just, that first question, take it head on. You know what I mean?
But here's the thing, Avi. Okay, you want her to go direct. Just think, she has to now appeal to the informed voter and the average mm-hmm. voter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The average voter.
Gary's probably more informed, yeah.
He's probably more informed, but the average voter doesn't even know what fracking is. And I understand that Congressman Dent wanted her to go deeper. I asked six people at my 300-plus debate party, just six, what is fracking? Sum it up in 30 seconds, give me the elevator speech. Blank stares. So she is trying to appeal to a wide range, show her personality, show her policies, mm-hmm. all within a finite time. And I think that she did a fabulous job of doing that. Did she answer every question? No, she didn't. Look, I can call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
But she most certainly made it very clear who she is and why she is qualified to run this country.
Ben Berger, I think you maybe had a follow up on that.
Well, I did. I would say to Gary, it's not about you. And I mean that not in an insulting way. It's not about me. It's not about any of us here. It's about the undecided voters. So, mm-hmm. And those folks need to have things framed in a certain way. So I actually thought that Harris did a great job of framing the debate, mm-hmm. controlling it from the very outset, putting it in her terms she wanted it to be in, and putting Donald Trump on the defensive, which he's used to doing to other people. Mm. She was actually using what I thought was a form of a rhetorical strategy called prolepsis, which means
prolepsis. All right, we got an SAT word here.
So
here we go.
Anticipating your opponent's arguments and then rebutting them in advance, like pre-buttal. Mm-hmm. So you're able then to, so yes, you're going to say to people, like she did last night, he's going to bring up immigration a lot, even when it's not really on the table. And so then when he did do that a lot, it predisposed the listener to be like, oh, well, actually, she said he was going to do this on badly. And so
she sort of primed them.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, and telling us what he's going to do economically puts him on the defensive. He spent a bunch of time saying that's wrong and saying what he's going to do. That's usually Donald Trump's playbook. She flipped the script on him last night.
Yeah, and I want to read a couple more comments. And we have Peter who writes, the best moment was when Ms. Harris described what Gilson and women who have been raped or miscarried go through in states where abortion has been criminalized. She's looking at Trump, disgust in her eyes, not verbal, but if you turn the sound off, who just looked presidential, who looked like a joker in every sense of the word. That was Peter's comment. And so I want to ask about the optics of this, because a lot of folks, this is show business. A lot of folks are multitasking while they're listening or watching the debate. I'm looking at all the memes that, you know, from screenshots from the debate. Like, let's talk about the nonverbal cues. And I want to start with you, Charlie Dent. Optically, what did things look like if you took away the sound? What did it look like to you?
Yeah, you know, I hadn't really thought a lot about that, but it seemed that Harris was... You know, you could see that she was making facial gestures. I'm not saying they were good or bad, but she was clearly in her face. She was reacting to some of the things that Trump said, either smiling or almost in disbelief at times. And so I thought that was a case. I don't think it hurt her. It might have helped her in some cases. But that's what I noticed more. You know, Trump seems, you know, he never smiles much. Mm-hmm. You know, you watch Trump, he just doesn't smile. And, you know, so he struck me as pretty stoic. You know, again, if I didn't have the volume on, you could tell that he was also agitated. He was agitated, stoic, never smiling. She smiled quite a bit and, you know, obviously was reacting to many of Trump's more inflammatory statements.
Yeah.
And let me bring in another caller now. This is Bryn on line 3, who said last night's debate had some echoes of history. Mm. Bryn, what are you talking about? What's your question or comment?
Well, I'm old enough to vaguely remember the McCarthy hearings on television in the early 50s. We didn't even own a TV. My mother would walk me down to the road. I grew up near Quakertown to Pennsylvania Dutch neighbors who had a TV, and my mom and the neighbor would just whoop and holler at the absurd things McCarthy said and the rebuttals and attempts to challenge him by the heroic Democratic senators that finally brought him down. So I just want to remind people, the Republican Party has gone down this road before, and I'm really sad to say that, but I just hope Donald Trump goes the way of Senator Joe McCarthy in shame and humiliation.
Well,
thank you.
That is Bryn's historical perspective, shades of McCarthy, according to Bryn. Let me read this comment from Roy in Northeast Philadelphia, who says Harris was very forceful. She was not a lightweight. Roy liked how Harris said, quote, the dictators would eat you for lunch. Mm. And actually, I wanted to direct that back to you, Charlie Dent, because I did sense almost a shift in intensity and tone from Harris when foreign policy became the central focus. I felt that she was really sort of targeted and sharp there, attaching Trump to dictators around the world. What did you make of her foreign policy discussions during the debate and Trump's rebuttals there?
Yeah, I never really thought that foreign policy was necessarily her strong suit or her comfort zone, but I thought she was, she was correct or smart to, go after Trump on his relationship with Putin and, you know, kind of going after him on Orban. Trump kept invoking the name of Viktor Orban in Hungary. So I thought she was smart to do that. I think she was also smart to recognize, I think she acknowledged that some of his former staff, including generals, were very critical of Trump and said he was a disgrace. And so she was trying to, you know, flex her national security chops a little bit in that way. And I think she spoke pretty strongly on the Russia-Ukraine matter. But I really didn't think that the whole conversation on foreign policy was very, very deep last night. I thought that was kind of lacking in the debate, that they really didn't get into that. The moderators, I'm putting this on the moderators more than anybody else, the moderators really didn't try to connect you know, national security with economic security. They just failed to do that. Not much of a discussion about China, from as I recall last night. So I thought the whole foreign policy discussion was lacking.
And I want to read a couple more comments. Becky from New Jersey said she did not like how the moderators referred to Trump as, quote, President Trump, not former President Trump, but she overall liked Harris's performance. Avi, another Avi emails.
No way.
Who says, I am deeply disappointed with both sets of journalists that handled the last two debates. They did not insist on getting answers to their questions when they weren't receiving any answer. They did not rise frequently enough to resist clear lies that were made. That is disturbing.
So was that me? I'm surreptitiously emailing during the show.
Another Avi. But I wanted to bring in a clip because this is a clip of former President Trump in his closing statement where he argues that Harris could have accomplished some of her plans while already in office. And I want to get your take on this. Go ahead.
She's going to do this. She's going to do that. She's going to do all these wonderful things. Why hasn't she done it? She's been there for 3.5 years. They've had 3.5 years to fix the border. They've had 3.5 years to create jobs and all the things we talked about. Why hasn't she done it?
And to me, that was one of the more effective moments that Trump had. Jasmine, Ben, I want to bring you all back into this conversation and talk about that. How do you think she handled it? Was she able to, throughout the debate, separate herself enough from Biden? And Ben, we'll start with you. Yeah.
That's been a huge question for her. Can she separate herself? And would she sort of throw Biden under the bus, or would she be loyal to him? I thought she did a very good job of actually saying frontally, look, I am not Joe Biden. You're not running against Joe Biden. You're running against me. I'm not Donald Trump. I'm not him. I'm my own person. And she also did a good job, I thought, of getting in life stories alongside her policy things. In her introduction about economics, she managed to get in there some things about her own life story, her biography. I would say to Donald Trump, if I were Kamala Harris, listen, Mr. Trump, if she wanted to not call him President Trump, welcome to the vice presidency. Exactly what do you think vice presidents do? There's a reason why in the show Veep, Julia Louis-Dreyfus never goes and sees the president. Right. They're doing the whole series there. That is not the role of the vice president. And as president, here is what I would do. I would also perhaps throw it back to Donald Trump. Well, look, you said you were going to revive and fix the coal industry. Has that happened? Have you done that? How is that border wall going? You had 4 years to do that and a number of other things. So I don't think she totally capitalized on that. It's really difficult to hit home runs on these things that she did better than I would have done in that situation.
Yeah, anything to add, Jasmine? Yeah.
Child, we got to go back to Schoolhouse Rock. What is the role of a vice president? You have very limp. You preside over the Senate. You are extremely dependent upon the president. And Veep is one of my favorite shows. I've been rewatching it. And you're right. We never find out who the president is in the show because, again, you are kind of handcuffed. And I thought she did a great job of not throwing President Biden under the bus. But I got to tell you, she missed one of the zingers because I would have said only one of us has been president on this stage.
Yes, yes. And that invokes, I think, what I thought was one of the more memorable moments of the night was when they asked about Trump's plans to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And he says, I have a concept of a plan. And I did think that undercut his attack on her in some ways. Yeah.
Avi, can I just please, when this man said that I have a concept of a plan, my man said, I have ideas, as if he hasn't been president. That's one. Or two, as if he is Jasmine Sessom sitting at home dreaming up what I would do if I was president. How are we going to elect you? And you are saying, well, I got an idea, but I haven't really worked it out yet. It's almost laughable. That was almost laughable.
So we're about to wrap up. I want to get a few more comments in here. Emily says, I love the way that Harris baited Trump. She got him every time. Jen says, I think Kamala Harris knocked it out of the park when she was talking about all the economists who thought she would do a better job than him. And she mentioned Wharton. That's when he first lost his mind and continued to spiral after that. It was great. And most of the comments are along those lines, thinking that Harris did better than Trump. There was a flash poll from CNN that showed the same. And she immediately, her campaign said after the debate, let's do round two. Let's do it again. I want all of you to answer a question for me. Is that smart for her? And should he accept? Charlie Dent, what do you think about this idea of her sort of immediately going to the Trump camp and saying, buddy, let's do it again?
Well, for Kamala Harris, sure, I want to have another debate after this one. Why not? Why not? I mean, she did well, and he did not do particularly well. Now, if I were giving advice to Donald Trump, I would tell him, absolutely, do not do another debate.
Really? Don't try to redeem yourself.
Well, I mean, does anybody expect that Donald Trump will be a little bit more disciplined and focused in the next debate than he was in this one or any other debate he's ever participated in? I don't know. I just don't think he should do it. Now, he may end up doing one anyway, because this is Donald Trump and he's going to want to go at it again. But I just don't think he acquitted himself too well last night. And she clearly demonstrated that she can needle him, she can troll him, and she can certainly trigger him. Mm-hmm. So if I'm Trump, I probably wouldn't want to get back in that arena.
Yeah, Jasmine, Ben, any thoughts on that?
You know, I think absolutely. Of course, she shines.
Yeah.
You know, she was a prosecutor. She shines here. If I'm Trump's team, I'm saying let's not. But I also want.
But isn't that a big part of his personality, though? You never back down. You never back down from a challenge. Do you think, you know, it might undercut him if he doesn't go back for round two?
I mean, me personally, I would love it if he did another debate, because every time he speaks, it just sinks him lower and lower. I mean, that man has a shovel that is eternal. But I would like, Veep Harris to focus on the people. I love that she is going directly to the people in the battleground states and getting to know them.
Yeah, final word.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake on her part. I would walk it back if I were she. It'd be one thing if we were operating in a different era without all the sound bites, but she has what she needs to make the memes, the GIFs, whatever. Donald Trump, do not underestimate Donald Trump. He is a fast learner. He's done it before, like against Clinton. I'd use the Seinfeld line and say, leave on a high note.
Yeah.
You've been great, folks. I'm out of here.
Yep. And we're out of here.
Wow. Yes.
You should do this show, Ben Berger, by the way, because that was perfect. So you just heard there from Ben Berger, Associate Professor of Political Science at Swarthmore. Thanks for your time. Jasmine Sessoms, Executive Director of Center 1968. Jasmine Sessoms, thanks so much for being here. And Charlie Dent, former Pennsylvania Republican Congressman from the Lehigh Valley. Thank you so much for all of your time today.
Yes, and thank you to all the callers. Fega, Trisha, sorry we didn't get to you, but thanks to everybody who emailed or reached out on social media. That's it for Studio 2 today. The show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Besser, Andreas Copes. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Al Banks engineered today's show from Studio 2 at WHRY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk with you tomorrow.